remember hearing a story a long time ago about this guy who was standing before the judge getting ready to be sentenced. And, you know, he's all nervous and everything. He asked the judge if he could use the restroom, and the judge allowed that. So he goes off to the restroom, and he sees a pipe that goes up to the ceiling, and he shimmies up the pipe. And there's a drop ceiling, and he crawls up into that drop ceiling, and he starts making his way out. And he gets about 30 feet, and that drop ceiling collapsed right into the courtroom, right in front of the judge. So, I want to ask you to imagine yourself on a jury panel. A jury panel of a, and I got some examples here, a controversial trial. I'm thinking maybe you're on the jury for the officer who arrested George Floyd. Or maybe the officers involved with the tragic death of Breonna Taylor. Maybe you're on the jury for the impeachment of Donald Trump. You know, so I'm trying to think of some bizarre, controversial cases out there. And just to ask you, do you think that you could be fair? Do you think that you would be objective? Or do you think, because I'm thinking a lot of these trials, it seems like everybody's mind's already made up. Before the trial ever begins, everybody's mind is made up. And I say that to think, what about with Jesus? Imagine yourself at the trial of Jesus. Jesus was the only person to live his entire life without doing anything wrong. Yet he was arrested, he was tried, he was convicted, he was condemned to suffer a punishment normally reserved for the worst of the worst of the Roman Empire, the worst criminals. How fair, how unbiased do you think his accusers were? How fair, how unbiased was his jury? So today I want to take us through I want to take us to the courtroom. I think we spent 2 weeks ago we were in the Garden of Gethsemane. And last week we were in the courtyard. Well, today I invite you to go into the courtroom. And there was actually six trials of Jesus in a matter of about 8 hours. And I want to pick it up in John chapter 18. We read this for a couple weeks now. John 18, verse 12. Then the detachment of soldiers with his commanders and the Jewish officials, they arrested Jesus. Remember the Garden of Gethsemane? The detachment went, they arrested Jesus. They bound him. And it says in verse 13, and then they brought him first to Annas, who was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, the high priest that year. Let's begin here. I want to ask you, why did they bring him to this guy? Who is this guy? Who is Annas? It says here, the father-in-law of Caiaphas, the high priest. Okay, so we get that. He's the father-in-law of Caiaphas. But why do they bring Jesus to him? And what I learned about Annas, who this guy is, he served as the high priest for 20 years prior, from 6 A.D. to 15 A.D. until he was eventually deposed by the Roman government, which is really interesting because a high priest is a position for life, but he was deposed. And then what I read after that, he was replaced by one of his sons. Who was replaced by another one of his sons. Five of his sons served as high priest. And right now, his son-in-law, Caiaphas, is the high priest. And apparently, Annas is the guy that, I mean, although he didn't have the title anymore, everybody recognized he's the one with the authority. I see him kind of as the godfather. And I wish I could do the godfather accent here, but, you know, Jesus, how's your family, you know? Nothing personal, it's just business, you know? That's who Annas is. He's the godfather of this mafia that was trying Jesus. I see him as somebody who's sly, somebody who's greedy, somebody who's powerful and very wealthy. It was this guy who turned the temple into the den of thieves. Remember when Jesus came through and he turned over the tables and said, you've turned this house of prayer into a den of thieves. That's because it was Annas it was him and his sons. They oversaw all the sacrifices that were being bought. You know, you bring a lamb to the temple to be sacrificed. And he says, oh no, yours isn't good enough. You need to buy one of ours. They're pre-approved. So it was they used temple currency because you couldn't use Roman currency because the the image of Caesar was on that, and that would be, that's an idol, that would be offensive. So you have to exchange the Roman currency for the temple currency, and they did that apparently at an exorbitant exchange rate so that Annas and his sons could profit from that. It says in John 18, verse 19, meanwhile, the high priest questioned Jesus about his disciples and his teaching. The high priest, this is Annas, talking about Annas here, he questioned Jesus about his disciples and his teachings. And Jesus says, I've spoken openly to the world. I always taught in the synagogue or at the temple where all the Jews come together. I said nothing in secret. Why question me? This is Jesus. Why are you questioning me? Ask those who heard me. Surely they know what I said. Jesus is saying, why don't you talk to the people, you know, the people that have seen the miracles, the people who've been healed, the people whose their lives have been changed. Talk to them. But they didn't want to do that. It says here in verse 22, when Jesus said this, one of the officials nearby struck him in his face. Is this the way you answer the high priest, he demanded. And Jesus says, if I said something wrong, testify to what is wrong. But if I spoke the truth, why did you strike me? And then Annas sent him still bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. Now right here, a couple things I want to see. What is the accusation? What is the crime? Why did they arrest Jesus? And what I see right now, they don't know what they've accused him for. They're some trumped up charges. Usually you need a charge before you arrest somebody. And the verdict, what at best, what Jesus at this moment is guilty of what? Being disrespectful to the high priest, who wasn't really the high priest. I want you to really see how illegal what was going on. There was no witnesses for his defense, no legal counsel, no charges. At least a half dozen points of order have been ignored in the proceedings. It was a trial at nighttime. That was forbidden. During the Passover, that was forbidden. Tried in someone's house, not even in a courtroom. It was in Annas's house. Not allowed legal counsel. Jesus pointed out witnesses should have been easy to find, but none were sought. They didn't want witnesses. In John 18, verse 24, then Annas sent him still bound to Caiaphas. To Caiaphas, the high priest. Which, in my reading, I'm thinking, you know, he sent him from Annas' house over to Caiaphas' house. And one thing I read was it meant the courtyard where Peter was, where he was denying Jesus, probably had to leave this house, go through the courtyard, and enter the next house, Caiaphas' house, right across from the courtyard, right where Peter was. So now my question is, well, who's Caiaphas? We know he's the high priest. Which means what? That means he's the spiritual leader of Israel. This guy is the spiritual leader of Israel. And as I tell you about this guy, I'm just going to point out, he makes me look really good. I'm just saying that. All right. He's the only one who can go into the Holy of Holies on the Day of Atonement. It's this guy. He's the one who goes into the Holy of Holies on the Day of Atonement. At this time, at this moment in time, he's the mediator between God and man. This guy is the mediator between God and man. And he's corrupt. I take you back to Matthew 26, which in verses 3 and 4. This happened 2 days before this moment. So take you a little bit back in time. Before this moment, 2 days before the Passover, and this is what it says in verse 3, then the chief priests and the elders of the people assembled in the palace of the high priest, whose name is Caiaphas, and they plotted to arrest Jesus in some sly way and kill him. 2 days before this moment, they're plotting how to kill Jesus. That is premeditated murder. That's what this is. And Caiaphas is somebody who believed in expediency. I take you back to John chapter 11, when after Lazarus was raised from the dead, and this is what it says in John chapter 11, then the chief priests and the Pharisees, they called a meeting of the Sanhedrin. What are we accomplishing, they asked. Here is this man performing many miraculous signs, and if we let him go on like this, everybody's going to believe in him, and we can't have that. And we can't have Jesus bringing people back from the dead all the time. We can't have everybody believing in Jesus. And Caiaphas says, you know nothing. Caiaphas, the high priest, he spoke up. You know nothing at all. You do not realize that it is better for you that one man die for the people than for the whole nation to perish. We got to kill him. That's what he's saying. This is Caiaphas. We've got to kill him. For the sake of everybody else, kill Jesus. I want you to understand, Caiaphas was corrupt. He was unbelieving. He was interested in his political career, his survival, his power, his agenda. Not interested in the truth. Not interested in whether Jesus is the Messiah or not, if he's from God or not. False witnesses were called. Matthew 26, verse 59, the chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin, they were looking for false evidence against Jesus so that they could put him to death. But they did not find any, though many false witnesses came forward. Finally, two came forward and declared, "This fellow said, I'm able to destroy the temple of God and rebuild it in 3 days." And the high priest stood up and said to Jesus, "Are you going to answer? What is this testimony that these men are bringing against you?" And Jesus remained silent. So they bring these false witnesses, and I was reading this, I don't know what the name of this book is, but this book identifies three categories of testimony. One is vain testimony, one is standing testimony, and the third is adequate testimony. Now, vain testimony would be testimony that's immediately thrown out. It's considered worthless, not relevant, and it's eliminated all, you know, as soon as it's said. A standing testimony would be recognized as testimony with some relevance, but they don't know what to do with it yet. So they let it stand until further evidence comes out. And then there's adequate testimony. That's relevant testimony, in which two or more witnesses agreed. So based on what I just told you here, the testimony they're receiving is all vain testimony. Vain testimony. Worthless testimony. And in Mark, he says in verse 56, many bore false witness against him, but their testimony did not agree. They brought in false witnesses, but their testimony did not agree. And Jesus remained silent. Isaiah 53, verse 7, he was oppressed, afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before the shearer is silent, so he did not open his mouth. So Caiaphas puts him under oath. And this is pretty clever. It's also pretty illegal because Caiaphas, he was supposed to preside over what's going on here. He was not supposed to intervene. He was actually forbidden to question the accuser. His job was to oversee, not to question. But the high priest said to him, "I charge you under oath by the living God. Tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God." That's an important question. We need to stop right here and think about this. What is going on here? Under oath, Jesus, are you the Christ? This is interesting here. How is Jesus going to respond to this? Is he going to remain silent? Can you do that? Can you remain silent when somebody puts you under oath and asks you point blank this kind of question? And according to Levitical law, Leviticus 5 verse 1, if a person sins because he does not speak up when he hears a public charge to testify regarding something he has seen or learned about, he will be held responsible. All right, so what I'm reading right here, Jesus is not... He can't just not say anything. He can't remain silent. He can't do nothing. That would be sin. And he can't lie because he can't say, "No, I'm not the Christ." That would be sin. So the only option here is to tell him the truth. Yes, and that's what he says. "Yes, it is as you say," Jesus replied. What was the question? Are you the Christ? Yes. In Mark chapter 14, he actually says, "I am." It's always powerful to me. "I am." He says, "I am the Christ. But I say to all of you, in the future you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on clouds in heaven." That's right out of Daniel chapter 7. He's claiming to be the Son of Man, and they knew exactly what that meant. You're claiming to be the Son of God. You're claiming to be Christ. And notice this. Notice Caiaphas' reaction. When he heard the words out of Jesus' mouth, I am the Christ. Caiaphas, Matthew chapter 26, verse 65, then the high priest tore his clothes and he said, he's spoken blasphemy. Why do we need any more witnesses? He tore his clothes. Now, I've never read this before. What I'm reading right now, this is very interesting to me. The garments of the high priest were considered very special garments, made to exact specifications. And if you go back to the book of Leviticus, in Leviticus chapter 10, it specifically says, okay, now, because think of this, I think in the Old Testament, you now and then we see these examples where people, they tear their clothes out of grief or out of mourning. You know, they're offended by something, so they tear their clothes. And so we get that. But the high priest is not allowed to tear his clothes. In Leviticus chapter 10, then Moses said to Aaron and his son Eleazar and another son whose names I can't pronounce, do not let your hair become unkempt. That's important. And do not tear your clothes or you will die. And the Lord will be angry with the whole community. The high priest, your responsibility, make sure you don't tear your clothes. And I was reading up on that. It's in Leviticus 10. It's also in Leviticus 21. It says the same thing. In the Old Testament, the ripping of garments was associated with grief or with mourning. But if a priest tore his clothes, he lost his position as high priest. And could very well face death. When Caiaphas dramatically, I mean, this political theater, woe is me, he blasphemed. When he did that, when he ripped his garments, he showed how offended he was by Jesus' words, but he unknowingly broke the law in Leviticus. This very important law that he probably was oblivious to, didn't even realize that one was in there. In doing so, he unknowingly renounced his position as high priest. Clothes are only torn when there is no further use for them. That's important. The ripping of his priestly garb symbolized that his priesthood had departed from him. And when Caiaphas tore his garment, not only did his spiritual authority come to an end, but so did the whole Levitical priesthood. It all came to an end. The old order has gone. The new order has begun. So who's our high priest today? Jesus is our high priest today. I thought that was great stuff. And so at this point, Caiaphas condemns Jesus to death. Look now, we've heard the blasphemy. What do you think? He is worthy of death, they answered. At this point, the men who were with him, the elders of Israel, they began to spit on him. They beat him. They mocked him. They spit in his face. And they struck him with their fist. And others slapped him and said, prophesy to us, Christ, who hit you? These, I just want to point out, these are the spiritual leaders of Israel. I go back to, they make us look good. That's what I'm saying. The accusation was the accusation. The accusation is blasphemy. And what's the verdict? If you blaspheme, what's the verdict? It's death. They say he is worthy of death. But also, you got to see, it's illegal. He's being tried at night. They're searching for false witnesses. They probably only invited people who they knew would agree with them. Could a court like this be just? So from here, we go to the third trial of Jesus in the middle of the night. We go to the Sanhedrin. It actually began in the morning, Luke 22. At daybreak, the council of elders of the people, both the chief priests and the teachers of the law, met together, and Jesus was led before them. If you are the Christ, they said, tell us. So now he's before the Sanhedrin. And let me talk about the Sanhedrin. What is the Sanhedrin? The Sanhedrin is basically it's the Supreme Court of Israel. That's what they are. It's made, and it was initiated. It was it began under Moses in the book of Exodus and in Deuteronomy. It's made up of 70 members of council. It's 23 priests, 23 elders, 23 scribes, and the high priest. And these are to be men of character. They are to be educated in the law, the law of Moses. They are to be able to understand Greek and Hebrew and Aramaic, and they are to be humble. And I want you to understand this, that the Sanhedrin justice system was considered one of the best justice systems in its day. The Jewish legal system was the most advanced and fair system of law to this date. It encompassed morality and spirituality as well as law. The accused was innocent until proven guilty. The trials were organized and well run. The witnesses had to agree, and there were stiff penalties for false testimony. If you lied and accused someone of something, you were subject to whatever penalty that they would have received, right up to the death penalty. That's the justice system of Israel. But for this trial, that was all thrown out the window. The whole procedure of Jewish law is designed for mercy. You know, they bring the worst of the worst before the jury, and they're searching for a way to give mercy, but not with Jesus. There was no mercy for Jesus. Matthew 26, verse 59, the chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin, they were looking for false evidence against Jesus so that they could put him to death, but they did not find any. They were looking for false evidence, using false witnesses. It was predetermined. It was premeditated. Luke 22, verse 70, they all asked, "Are you the Son of God?" And he replied, "You're right in saying I am." And they said, "Why do we need any more testimony? Why should anybody?" And Jesus never got the opportunity to call opposing witnesses. Can you imagine? Can you imagine some of the people Jesus could have called? Like, hey, let's call John the Baptist, who said, "Behold, the Lamb of God." Now, you couldn't call John the Baptist because he was dead at this point. But that's what John the Baptist had said. "This is the Lamb of God." What about Peter? You are the Christ. What about Lazarus? "I once was dead, but I'm alive now because of Jesus." Martha, Lazarus' sister, said, "I believe you are the Christ, the Son of God, who was to come into the world." What about Jesus' mother? Who could have talked about the virgin birth and how she's from the lineage of David? Jesus himself could have walked them through the scriptures as he did on the road to Emmaus and point out, look, this had to happen, this had to happen, this had to happen, and it all points to me. Jesus would have said, all these scriptures point to me. But they didn't want to hear that. They didn't care. They never asked. These men were unbelieving, is what it says in Luke 22, verse 67. They were interested in their own survival, is what it says in John 11, verse 49. Filled with envy, is what it says in Matthew 27, verse 18. So what's the accusation here? The accusation is still, it's blasphemy. He blasphemed. And they didn't care about what the truth was. He's claiming to be God, and we can't have that. And what's the verdict? Death. He's guilty. He should die. And it's illegal because there's no witnesses, no legal counsel, no time to prepare a defense. Jesus was condemned to die. In their hurry to convict and sentence the Savior, the Sanhedrin did not see their own hypocrisy. They were so intent on getting rid of Jesus that they were willing to do whatever it took. And I read that the legal system, legal scholars tell us that Annas and Caiaphas and Sanhedrin broke at least 40 Jewish laws in the arrest and trial of Jesus Christ. They broke 40 laws. They bribed Judas to betray him. They arrested Jesus and conducted the trial at night. They failed to bring Judas to court to accuse Jesus. They tried Jesus on the eve of the Sabbath and tried him by a single judge. They made no formal indictment against him. They tried him even though they were prejudiced and had plotted to kill him long ago. They did not defend him, although it was their duty by the law to defend him. They questioned Jesus directly so that he could incriminate himself. They failed to acquit Jesus when there were no witnesses. They deliberately sought false testimony. They slapped him for no reason. They called his testimony blasphemy when it was the truth. They did not punish the false witnesses who gave false testimony. And they voted twice, and this is important, they voted twice within just a few hours of time rather than waiting the period they were supposed to wait, I think 24 hours, if not 48 hours, so that mercy could have a chance. But they didn't wait. And I would point out here, this group is composed primarily of what? Of religious people. You know, decent people. Rule followers. That's who they are. And just the hypocrisy. These religious people, they were so angry, so indignant when Jesus broke the law of the Sabbath. But they don't think twice about the 40 laws they broke in trying to kill Jesus. Apparently they can justify that somehow. Luke 23, verse 1 says, "The whole assembly rose and led him off to Pilate." Now they did that because they can condemn him to death, but they couldn't put him to death. So it had to be ratified by Pilate, the Roman governor. And to paint the picture, Jesus had been awake for 24 hours. So he hasn't slept. He probably hasn't eaten. He hasn't had anything to drink. The beatings have already begun. And now he's been brought before Pontius Pilate, who was governor of Judea from 26 A.D. to 36 A.D. King Agrippa the First, he was the grandson of Herod the Great. He wrote a letter to the emperor about Pilate, this guy right here. And he called Pilate, this is his description. Pilate is inflexible, he's merciless, and he's obstinate. So this is who we're talking about now. This is Pilate. Pilate didn't like the Jews. He had no respect for the Jews. He had done things, and I could give you a long list of things he's done in the past, which caused the Jews to riot and got him in hot water with his superiors. He hated the Jews, and the Jews hated him, but he feared his political career, so he was at their mercy, and they knew that. They knew that. It says in Luke 23, the whole assembly rose and led him off to Pilate, and they began to accuse Jesus, saying, "We have found this man subverting our nation. He opposes payment of taxes to Caesar and claims to be Christ the King." And then, this is interesting to me. That what was the accusation just moments ago? I mean, moments ago is blasphemy. That's not on their radar right now. No, he won't pay taxes. Now, why are they accusing him of not paying taxes? Because Rome doesn't care about blasphemy. They only care about two things, peace and taxes. So here the accusation changes. It's treason. It changed mysteriously between walking from this house to this place. In Luke 23, verse 3, so Pilate asked Jesus, "Are you the King of the Jews?" "Yes, it is as you say," Jesus replied. Once again, a very important question. Are you the king? Yes. What was Jesus' answer? Yes. Well, then Pilate announced to the chief priest and the crowd, "I find no basis for a charge against this man." Pilate just declared Jesus innocent. "I find no guilt in this man." So the verdict here, he's being accused of treason. The verdict is innocent. He's innocent. So right there, he should have been released, but he wasn't. No, so Pilate sends him to Herod. And that is illegal. Pilate is trying to pass the buck instead of releasing an innocent man. He sends him on to Herod. This is only found in the book of Luke. Luke 23 talks about Herod. Herod Antipas, who was the son of Herod the Great. You remember Herod the Great? Herod the Butcher. He's the one who killed the babies in Bethlehem. So Herod Antipas, he's the one who had John the Baptist beheaded. Jesus referred to this man as a fox, and I don't think he meant that he was good looking. That's not what he was talking about, no. He was selfish. He was known for his lack of integrity. And this is what it says in Luke 23, verse 8. When Herod saw Jesus, he was greatly pleased because for a long time he had been wanting to see him. For what he had heard about him, he had hoped to see him perform some miracle. And he plied him with many questions, but Jesus gave no answer. So here in this court scene, what we see going on here, Herod, we see him ridiculing Jesus. Herod is seeking the spectacular. He wants to be entertained. He wants a show. He questions him at some length. Verse 10 says, the chief priests and the teachers of the law, they were standing there vehemently accusing him. Jesus has done this, and he's done this, and he's done this, and he's done this, and he's done this. And Herod treated Jesus with contempt. He mocked him. It says in verse 11, when Herod and his soldiers ridiculed and mocked him, they dressed him in an elegant robe and they sent him back to Pilate. So in this fifth trial, what do we see here? The accusation, there is no accusation. Nothing specified. He's just there. And you'll see in just a few verses later, Herod found nothing wrong. The verdict, there's nothing wrong here. But it's illegal once again because there's no grounds, no defense allowed, and he's not released. He sends him back to Pilate. So now we are at the sixth trial of Jesus. And the accusation, he's still under the accusation of treason. Herod didn't help a bit. The verdict, Pilate found nothing wrong. We've already established that once. You look at in verse 14, this is what Pilate says, "I've examined him in your presence, and I have found no basis for your charges against him. Neither has Herod." I can't find anything wrong. Herod can't find anything wrong. He has done nothing to deserve death. And then about five verses later, in verse 22, "For the third time he spoke to them. Why? What crime has this man committed? I have found in him no grounds for death." Three times Pilate declared him to be innocent. Three times. Matthew 27, verse 24 adds this. When Pilate saw that he was getting nowhere, but that instead the uproar was starting, he took water and he washed his hands in front of the crowd. And he says, I am innocent of this man's blood. It is your responsibility. All right, now that's easy to say, but can you do that? Here, Pilate is trying to absolve himself of any guilt, washing his hands. And Dante, in his book, The Inferno, he depicts Pilate in the seventh circle of hell, still washing his hands. Can you imagine that? Even today, Pilate is still trying to wash his hands, and he can't get the guilt off of him. And then he sentenced him to death. He handed him over to die without proof. After declaring him innocent, he condemns Jesus to die. And some notes that I wrote down here. Neither Pilate nor Herod convicted Jesus of any crime whatsoever. Jesus was proven, he was declared to be innocent, proven guilty of nothing. Each trial that we looked at in a matter of 8 hours was illegal. Why did this happen? Jews and Gentiles both were responsible for the call to put Jesus to death. There was three trials before the Jews, and there was three trials before the Gentiles. Pilate and Herod, and then back to Pilate again. And my whole point here is, I look at all this, and the only thing I have for you here is how unfair this was. The best legal system in its day, and Annas and Caiaphas and Sanhedrin and Pilate and Herod, were all clearly unjust and unfair with Jesus. So if you have an outline, the back page, the summary here. Jesus was betrayed for a bribe. Jesus was tried in the middle of the night. Jesus was condemned for blasphemy, claiming to be God, but they never gave him a chance to prove that he was God. Jesus was accused by false witnesses who were never punished. Jesus was not allowed to call witnesses. Jesus was not appointed any legal representation. Jesus was declared innocent by Pontius Pilate three times. Jesus was spat on, slapped, hit, mocked, and eventually crucified. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him. And by his wounds, we are healed. So I present to you today the case of Annas against Jesus, Annas versus Jesus, the case of Caiaphas versus Jesus, the case of the Sanhedrin versus Jesus, the case of Pilate versus Jesus, the case of Herod versus Jesus, and then back to Pilate versus Jesus. All for this moment right now. What about you and Jesus? You versus Jesus. And I think before you make your mind up, it's important to consider that he was declared innocent three times. In him there was no sin. And it's also very important to recognize he declared before Caiaphas he was the Messiah, the Son of God. When asked point blank, are you the Messiah? What did he say? Yes, I am. And before Pilate, when Pilate asked, are you a king? He said, yes, I am. Jesus claims to be a king. Jesus claims to be the Messiah. Pilate declares him innocent. So it's important for us to consider this evidence because in reality it's no longer Jesus who's on trial. It's now you who's on trial. And the question you must answer is, what will you do with Jesus? And I would ask you, have you been fair with Jesus? Have you been fair with the evidence? Pilate asked, what shall I do with Jesus? What about you? What will you do with Jesus?